praise you. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Good afternoon. I'll just add to everybody else's voice, Happy New Year. We say that even if we're not happy, don't we? So I don't know how happy you're feeling today, but I hope that just those words that Aaron led us in, open your heart to receive some joy today. As he said in his prayer, we're going to talk about building a life, not building a house, but Jesus gives a story that talks about building a house and compares it to building a life. So we're going to go there in just a moment, but what I want to show you first, we can go to the next slide. What is that? Blank what? Notebook, like a journal, right? And there's nothing written there yet. If any of you ever try to write in a journal or a diary to do that, if you've been successful in sustaining it, it could be hard to do, you know? But I had a lot of false starts, but the last, 10 years or so, it's been, this thing right here has been an important part of my day every day. It's how I talk to God. It's how I write down what I'm learning. I write down what I'm worried about. I write down what I think might happen, what good did happen. So it's really a conversation that I have every morning with God, and I write it down. So you can see, you know, pages filled. But you can also see, like you do up there, lots of pages unfilled. And the reality is that every one of us are building a life. We're telling a story with our life. And there's lots of things that enter into your story, circumstances you have no control over, stuff that happens. You know, COVID happened and it changed our lives. You know, we didn't choose that. It chose us. So there's things in our stories we don't have control over, and I don't want to talk about those. What I want to talk about is what the parts that we have control over, because you are the author of your story. And I feel right now, when you look at those blank pages, let's just say that's 2024 now. Today is January 7th. How are you going to live this day? And then tomorrow, you got another blank page. How are you going to live that day? And if you do that day after day after day, what you are doing is you're writing a story of your life. And like all good stories, it's got ups and downs. It's got threats and danger and adventure and joy, because that's stories come from human beings, and that's what we're like. So the question I want to have you ask is, or think about, is think about that representing your life and to say, what kind of story do you want to write for 2024? Several, like Brenda and some others I haven't seen in a few weeks, I said, we hope for a better year. We hope that when we get a year from now that many of you are in a different place and a better place than you are right now. And again, some of that you don't have control over, but some you do. And what we need to focus on for all of us is what we can actually change or control. So in a sense, every time I make any choice to get out of bed, that's the story I wrote as I began my day. Did I have something to eat? Did I get some coffee? What clothes did I choose to wear? I got on a subway, bumped into people. People bumped into me. How did I respond? And so on and so forth. This is how life is lived. And you are the author and the central character in your story. I found this very helpful for me over the years to think about what kind of story I'm writing with my life. Not with my pen. I do put my pen and fill in those pages, but what I'm writing simply reflects what I'm doing and how I'm doing. So it's telling the story of my life. Now, Chris mentioned that she hates New Year's resolutions, doesn't really do them. Most people actually feel that way. When I survey people, they think it's hard to do. It's a waste of time. You know, we don't follow through. We don't actually do it. Usually by the first week. It's really funny, by the way, if you get a membership in a gym, which I did last year, I got the Planet Fitness cheapy, $9 a month. And when January hits, for the first 2 months, you can't work out. It's filled with people. All the lockers are filled. All the machines are filled. You're waiting in line. And then you get to March and April, and everybody's gone. It empties out. So these are people that had good intentions. They intended, you know, to get in shape, and they just couldn't sustain it. But what I've done is really try to take this before God to say, what areas do I need to work on this year? What areas do I need to improve? And sometimes it's physical, like I want to eat better, I want to lose weight, I want to be healthier, I want to stop some eating all that junk food. But sometimes, and more often, it's developing the inner person. Like, I want to be a kinder person. I want to respond in kindness. I want to be a generous person. I want to be a forgiving person. Those things in the long run tell a better story. That's a story that we get to write. Am I an angry person or a peacemaker? What kind of story do you want to write? So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to do it by looking at a story that Jesus told at the end of what we call the Sermon on the Mount. Most of you were not here when we did a series on that. We called it a message on the Mount, not a sermon. Because when I think sermon, I don't know what you think, but I grew up with sermons, and they were usually, they sounded angry. I felt like I was being yelled at from the Bible, and I felt guilty and judged all the time. When Jesus taught, I don't think he didn't have a microphone, didn't have a bullhorn. He taught. It's a message, a lesson. And he did it in one particular case in the Gospel of Matthew, which is the first of the four Gospels. In chapters 5, 6, and 7, we have a record of what I think is the most important message ever given. Because if the story is true, if the Christian story is true, which is a story of incarnation, that God came to be among us in the person of Jesus, then this is God giving us a message. For three chapters, 111 verses, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. At the very end, he tells this parable, which we'll get to in a moment. So when you think about the Sermon on the Mount, if you've ever heard that before, or you've ever heard someone talk about it, or you've seen some depiction of it in art or movies or films, usually it looks something like this. That's the Sea of Galilee behind them. They're up on a hill. How many people would you guess are there? Well, I don't know. You want to? Let's take time and count them, okay? One, two, three. It's a lot of people. Now, here's how Matthew 5 begins. So look at the words on the screen very carefully. It says, "Now, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. And his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. And he said." So I think that picture, Mari, can we go back to that picture for a second? If you're sitting in the grass, how far back can people hear you? About three rows, maybe, if that. So I don't think this is actually the right way to picture what Jesus was doing. It says that his disciples came to him. What's a disciple? It's a student, a learner. Ones that had experienced enough about Jesus that they decided they wanted to follow him, because that's what disciples did. They followed their teacher. So when Jesus said many times, "Follow me, follow me, follow me," that was his invitation. That's what he was talking about. Come learn from me how to live. I'm going to teach you how to live. Come and follow me. So a better picture, which I didn't find one, would be Jesus sitting with, it was more than the 12. The 12 were called apostles, but he had many more disciples. So it could have been 50, it could have been 100, who knows. But the important thing is that this was a training session that Jesus was doing with his disciples, his followers, because he was going to leave soon, and he's going to give the mission to them. So how do we carry forth Jesus' mission? Well, 111 verses tell us how. That's the Sermon on the Mount. To make us, shape us into people who love our enemy. We bring peace where there's strife. When we're wronged, we forgive. We don't live filled with anger and lust. All these things are addressed in these 111 verses that Jesus was training his disciples. So much richness in there. I would really encourage you, a good goal for 2024 would be to actually read Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Read it over and over again. This is the very teaching of God to human beings, telling us, here's how to live. And here, by the way, is how to build a life that's going to be solid, rock solid. We talked about building on a firm foundation in our worship today. So Jesus teaches chapter 5, chapter 6. At the end of chapter 7, he concludes this message with a parable. And it starts this way. It starts with the word therefore. And whenever you see therefore in the Bible, it's saying, in light of everything that's come before, now this is how I want you to think. So Jesus said, therefore, anyone who hears these words of mine, which words? The ones he just taught? At that point, probably 107 verses. Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like this, is like a wise man or woman who built his or her house on the rock. And the rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. If you don't remember anything else I say today, this is a promise that says if we will build our foundation of our life and the teachings of Jesus, then we are going to have a solid life that can withstand everything that comes at it. The rain, the wind, the storms, it's not going to fall because you have a foundation. So using the analogy of building, let's go to the next slide. Let's say that you want to build a house and that's the plan you get. Now that's just showing the layout. It's not giving you all the specifics about how far the 2x4s need to be spaced and the wiring and all the details. Those are the codes. This is just a plan. So let's say that you wanted to build a house like this. So you got a plan. Now you have to go into the codes. And the next slide is an example of building code foundation requirement checkpoints. So it asks a bunch of questions. It gets way, way more specific than that. In terms of if you want a house, an actual physical house. Now, we're not talking about your life for a moment. Actual physical house, like this building that we're in right now. I was the CEO of this mission for about 7-8 years. And when I started, we had 3 floors here. Only 3. And we did a project, cost us $11 million we had to raise to add 3 floors, taking it to 6. So we had a very detailed building code from the city of New York, believe me. To put all that weight on top, we had to open up every wall. In this chapel, this whole wall was opened up, right to the studs or to the concrete. Same thing, all around, up on all the floors, and we had to put steel crossbeams like this on every wall, all the way up to the 3rd floor because all that weight on top of it. So that when you take the elevator up or take the stairs up and you're on the 5th or 6th floor, you don't have to worry that it's going to collapse because we follow the code. So what Jesus is essentially saying is that the code for building a life is the teachings of Jesus. That's the code. That's the building code. So turn the other cheek, love your enemy, go the extra mile, forgive. No matter how many times someone sins against you, forgive, et cetera, et cetera. That's all the building code for building a life. Jesus is interested in not people that believe the right doctrine so much as people who live the life. Because that will change your life and it'll change people around you and it ultimately could change the world if we live this way, if we actually live this way. I had one time, I was, Chris and I, it's the only really nice house that we had. We had the house built in Michigan and we were only in there about 7 years and God called us to New York and now we're squeezing a little apartment like that's the best you can do. But we had a house and I wanted to build a deck in the backyard and it was 2 levels. So it's complicated. It's going to have stairs and posts. So I got the building code, and the building code said, based on the size of the deck, I have to put 12 posts down into the ground. How far down? The code tells you. Because there's a frost line in Michigan. Things freeze down as far as 42 inches. So you got to go 42 inches down into the ground. So that is right here. That's the depth of the hole. I have to dig 12 of them. And then I put the post in there, and then you put concrete around it or pea gravel or something. And now it's going to be secure. So I get to work building, digging the holes, and found out the ground was clay with lots of rock in it. And I don't have a power tool. I got one of those old, you know, those post hole diggers? You've seen them. You go down, and you get down farther and farther and farther. And I got 11 of them done. It took me probably a week or two working after work and, you know, my spare time on the weekends. I get to the 12th one, and I get down about 1.5 feet, and it hits clunk. Well, I've hit a lot of rocks, so I just try to dig around the rock, and I can't get around it. As I'm leaning down, I'm laying on my stomach. I actually had a spoon digging the clay around, trying to get to the edge of the rock, and the hole should only be this big. Well, it's about this big, and I'm still not on the edge of the rock. So I'm thinking, all right, the inspector's going to say that's okay because that's not going anywhere. I got 11 at 42 inches or more. This one's maybe 2 feet at the most, but it's solid, so it's going to be fine. So the inspector comes out, and he measures with his tape measure, and he gets to the 12th one over here, and he looks down, and he doesn't even measure it. He goes, what's going on here? I said, that rock could be 10 feet across. I can't get it out, and I can't move it. It's got to go right there. He said, call me when you got it down to 42 inches. I was like, oh, man. Probably the first time in my life I wanted to bribe somebody. Please, how much money do I have to give you? So nope, I had to dig it out. And when I finally got down, you know, around the edge, it was huge. And I had to get ropes around it and get some people's help to pull it out. And then we went down 42 inches. I called him. He came out. Everything was cleared. Now, that was almost 20 years ago. I think it was 20 years ago that I built that. And it's in Michigan. And I drove by it the other day, took a picture I was going to show you. I forgot to bring it with me. But it's still there. And there's been plenty of wind and snow and rain. No earthquakes or mudslides in Michigan, but, you know, plenty, and it looks great. And hopefully 50 years from now, it's still there. Why? because I built the right foundation. Now, Jesus, by contrast, so he said a wise man or woman builds their life, builds their house on a solid foundation, meaning you build your life by following Jesus' commandments. To be intentional about that. And I just, you know, I'll confess, as someone who has been in church all my life and grew up in the church, and I've been working in ministry for 40-some years now, that a good part of my life, I was more interested in believing the right things and didn't care that much about whether I actually looked like Jesus. You know, I kind of thought I did, maybe pretended I did, and I tried to work really hard on my image and only let you see the good part of me. No one's watching. Maybe there's other things going on. There was. Never was concerned about that. And then I had kind of this awakening, I don't know how many years ago, where I realized that, no, Jesus came to change me and change you. And that matters to him a lot. It matters that I believe he was the Son of God, but he's not now just looking at the clock waiting for me to die so I can go be with him. He says, Craig, you're living now. I have a vision for your life. I have a vision for 2024 for you, that you would build your life on the foundation of actually following me, following my teachings. You know, it's Gandhi, who was a Hindu. You know history of India. They were under Great Britain rule for a very, very long time, and they wanted to be independent. And Gandhi led a revolution that there was not shedding of blood. They got their independence. And when he was interviewed one time, and he said, how can you bring peace? How can peace come? He said this. Remember, he's Hindu. He's not Christian. He said, if everyone would read the Sermon on the Mount of Jesus and live it out, it would change the world. And then he said, every morning he got up, and before he started his day, he read Matthew 5, 6, and 7. This is a Hindu man who saw the value of Jesus' teaching and knew that this could be life-changing, world-changing, and it did. It changed India. They get through peaceful resistance, no bloodshed, no weapons, no anger. Eventually, they got their freedom. Jesus' teachings are powerful. We need to know them. We need to think about them. We need to measure ourselves against them. That's the real value. When I read, I was just reading the section. I'm actually trying to memorize. We'll see how far I can get through it. But the part I was working on last week said this. He said, you have heard it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I say, anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, raka, which was a naughty word in the first century, raka to that person, will be answerable to the courts. And anyone who says, you fool, calling someone a fool, will be in danger of the fires of hell. Anger. So now I'm looking in the mirror. Here's the building plan. Here's the code to build a solid life. Deal with your anger. Don't be angry. All right. Can you not be angry by just saying, I'm not going to be angry anymore? Some of you have a temper. You know that. You got a short fuse. We use language like that. Some of our personalities or temperaments are more prone to that. The reality is that, first of all, do I want to be a not angry person? Would I like to change? And if I'm going to follow Jesus, he's going to demand it. He's going to say, look at my example. Look at how I lived. When I was insulted, when I was persecuted, eventually put to death, I didn't resist. I didn't fight back. No anger. In fact, when he was on the cross, he said, Father, forgive them. Who's the them? The ones that put him on the cross. Forgive them. This is the foundation of our faith. This is what it means to follow Jesus. Now, he goes on. So the wise man or woman builds this way. The next verses, and this is where he concludes his story. He says, everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man or woman who built his or her house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. Now again, Jesus is not in the house building business. He doesn't really, you know, care too much about that. But this was something familiar that we can understand. We know what it's like to put a foundation down. And to build on that means it's secure. If your foundation is not secure, the whole house is not secure. In fact, I have a little picture before we go there, just a moment, Mari. So I figured there has to be on the internet some pictures of houses that didn't have good foundations that collapsed. So I Googled it. Thank God for Google. And I found a bunch of disasters that I could see This one that you're going to see very briefly is in Utah, and it actually, I picked this one because a lot of them, they build too close to the edge of a cliff and erosion. It's not the foundation. They just should have built it, you know, farther away. Like California has those. This one was in Utah where they said it turned out the foundation of a bunch of houses that they built was not built correctly. They didn't follow the code. So when Jesus said, if you don't keep these commandments of mine, you're going to be like a house that's built on sand. Then when the storms come, it's going to crash. And it says, great, it fell with a great crash. So here's a great crash. Wow, right? Now, again, everything above the earth looked good, right? Nice looking house, two stories, you know, all the wiring, plumbing was all there. It's what was below the surface that no one could see where the error was. And so over time, it couldn't take the weight of it, and it crashed and went down into a canyon. He was also pretty close to the edge there as well. By the way, no people were injured in the making of this video. I actually read up that they knew they were in trouble. They did inspections. Things were starting to crack in the house. And so they bring an inspector out, and they realize that they cut corners. And when you cut corners, you pay for it. So have this image in your mind, you know, not something to dwell on, but, you know, we are writing a story. We are building a house, all of us. And the instruction manual is both easy and hard. The building code is both easy and hard. It's easy because Jesus laid it right out for us. Can we read the words and then say, I heard them from you, Jesus. I'm going to put them into practice. Hearing them is not enough. Hearing the words and then intending to put them into practice. And you or I will never do it perfectly. This is an area we grow in. I'm going to ask you in 2024 to consider this a year of growth. That you're going to build a more solid life, a more stable life. You're going to put roots or foundation down deeper and build on top of that. And the way you do it is to follow the teachings of Jesus. Now, if you keep coming to Communitas, we're going to help you with that. Because all we do very simply every week is we have some worship so we can praise and lift our voice to God and be moved by the words of our worship, and then we teach. And what we're trying to do in teaching is I'm not up here as the expert at life. I'm up here as a broken, flawed man who has given his life to Jesus. So when Jesus said, follow me, I said, yes, I'll follow you. And the more I follow him, the more solid my life will be and yours as well. So that's the prayer and hope for this year. So I'm going to go ahead and pray. And then we're going to listen and carefully to these words in this last song, because it really expresses what we talked about today. So God, I thank you for the record of Jesus, what he did and what he said, what he modeled for us, what he encouraged us and challenged us to do. I just pray that you'd help me and help each of us as we look at this year ahead of us, all the days that are ahead of us, that we would see evidence of you working in our lives as we intend to follow you and submit to you and build a solid life on a solid foundation. That's you. I pray this in your name. Amen.